Should you eat that cake in the break room?
What makes the ultimate office pet?
Is the shuffling from the next bathroom stall a demonic rite or something far worse?
On the Work Life and Balance podcast, you can find terrible answers to some of your most uncomfortable questions.
Whether it's coming to work with late stage syphilis
or staying on trend with pants full of angry raccoons.
I'm Frank Eastman.
And I'm Derek Lewis.
Two guys who ought to know better on Work Life Imbalance.
Find us at WLICast.com, on iTunes, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you feel different now?
Yes.
Less anxious?
Much less.
Do you have any special feelings?
I feel
like my heart is being touched by Christ.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and I'm a little strung up on mushrooms right now. I will admit that. No, I don't. And over there in the corner, looking somewhat like a water buffalo, but orange with speckles, is Trish Coughlin.
Yeah, but I think you've mistaken me. I'm the great brightly colored unicorn. I mean, come on.
I'm still trying to get over the talking water buffalo thing. And there's a pile of clothes there, something that's melted, and I think that could be Sam.
I'm melting.
Ah, it talks.
We're just going to freak you out for the rest of this episode.
Yeah, because we are going to be talking about Altered States from 1980. Mm-hmm. This is Sam's pick. Blame him. It's Sam.
It was my pick. Last week, I was all hung up on Ken Russell, and this week we're doing Ken Russell.
So. That's right.
When I saw that he was the director, I'm like, oh, that's why this
Connection
one is
me,
the one.
That's where I got messed up, is I was watching Cat People, and it made me think of Altered States, and snowballed from there.
Okay, talking pile of clothes. Yeah, no, Altered States, this is a bit of a trippy film, but I hadn't seen it before, so this is kind of cool. If I had, I certainly didn't remember it, and I probably would have, considering most of the time the people in this are naked.
There's a lot of naked.
There's a lot of naked in this movie. Yeah.
But it's both people, like it's William Hurt and Blair Brown. So
yeah, yeah.
They're just both naked.
They're just naked all
Trust
the time.
Me, if I looked like either one of them, I would probably spend a lot of time naked.
That's true.
There's something to be said for that. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie actually is also the feature film debut of
William Hurt.
Andrew Barrymore.
Oh, look at you guys. You actually did your homework.
That was the only homework we did. You know that, right?
Yeah.
We look at the IMDb trivia. That's where we go.
There's some other stuff that I did read on here about it. I always do some reading. I don't make the extensive notes that Jay does, but
I looked up the writer.
Yeah. Oh, my notes are mostly useless. It's just to kind of coalesce thoughts in my brain. Most of the time I just look at the little top portion of what I could just look at IMDb for. and then I don't look at my notes again.
FYI, it's kind of fun to go back and see your impressions of the movie later on. Try it sometime. It's good.
Again, got to listen to my own episodes, apparently. Altered States is from 1980, directed by Ken Russell. And if you didn't recognize that name from when we talked about it last week, and Sam just going off on it now, he directed Gothic, Whore, and Lair of the White Worm. I almost want to say that really quickly. Mm-hmm. Gothic, Whore, Lair, in the Lair of the White Worm.
I know. That sounds like one movie.
It does sound like one movie. And it does sound like a Ken Russell movie.
It Absolutely. Totally sounds like a Ken Russell movie.
Oh god, yeah. Oh. And then there was another one I'm trying to think of. Mata Hari, but it'll come to me.
Okay. You just hold on to that thought. or try to get it back. This is based on a novel by Patty Chayefsky, and the screenplay was also by Patty Chayefsky, but was credited as Sidney Aaron.
Yeah, because he couldn't get along with Ken Russell.
No.
But he had other film credits. He wrote the screenplay for Painter Wagon from episode 73.
I saw that
too. And episode 75, Network.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a bit of a favorite of ours, whether we realize it or not.
Yeah.
And you read some of the other stuff. Like, I got into, like, a Ken Russell
loop. And this is his only novel, is Altered States.
Sorry, Chayefsky's. I got into a Chayefsky loop. I was looking at trailers for all the movies that he wrote the scripts for, and I'm like, he's done a lot of pretty good movies.
Mm-hmm. This was also his last script.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. He had got a little bug up in his butt, and despite the fact that Ken Russell took pretty much the dialogue verbatim from the book, there's a certain Ken Russell over-the-top style of him having his actors over-enunciate.
Over the top.
Over the top. And sometimes he would hide some of the techno-babble under mumbling just to make it a little easier on the actor.
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, I thought it was also a way for him to get around the arguments he was having with Chayefsky about some of the dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to dial it back?
what's hilarious though is they thought Ken Russell thought it was like a really ponderous, pretentious script, and I'm like, Ken Russell thought that.
Yeah.
There's a pot kettle situation brewing right here.
There really is. Yeah. Yeah. Because you're listening off of the movies, I'm like, I love all these movies, but they are really pretentious.
Yep.
Every one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I quite like Lair of the White Worm, but...
I love Gothic, too.
Yeah, Gothic's not bad. I haven't seen Gothic.
Gothic's one of the better ones. Yeah. I'd say it's probably one of his best ones.
I'm pretty sure I've seen Horror as well, but I don't remember anything about it.
Oh,
so
I've
couldn't
seen
have been
Horror.
Very good.
Teresa Russell? It's decent. It's weird. It's really dark.
So a pretty standard Ken Russell fare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very dark, very naked.
This movie was budgeted at $15 million. Had an opening weekend, and keep in mind it had a limited release opening, so it only did $174,600. Mm-hmm. But it did wind up grossing in the U.S. $19.85 million, so not too bad, and that doesn't include worldwide and later DVD releases. I mean, it's certainly not a success by any means, but it was well-reviewed. Mostly,
yeah.
From the people who got it. Had an IMDb rating of 6.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score was 86%, over an audience score of 71%, and Metacritic was less kind at 58.
Yeah. Oh, released at Christmas Day, too.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. What the fuck did I just watch?
It did not bad for a really troubled production. I mean, Paramount dropped it. It was already in production when Paramount dropped it. Mm-hmm. And then it got picked up by Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. They dropped a director and before Ken Russell stepped on.
He was like, Ken Russell was number five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, they had a tough time getting this movie made to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
And it kind of made Ken Russell a pariah, too.
To a certain extent, yeah.
You know, difficulty with the writer. I mean, certainly didn't. Chayefsky was dead 2 years after this.
Yes.
A little less, under 2 years after this. Yeah. But I don't think it did anybody any favors in the long run.
In the long run? I mean,
maybe William Hart.
Well, given it was a debut film, he did all right coming out of this. And I mean, Ken Russell didn't do that bad because, I mean, Gothic, Lair of the White Worm, and Horror were all after this.
Mm. Right?
So it's not like his career ended, but it certainly he did get relegated to the limited release type of productions and distribution.
But, you know, he kept working at least. So.
Yeah, I think if it did make him a pariah, it seems more along the lines of he probably... I mean, the studio dropped it, so he's having troubles with the studio. I mean, it's more... It might be... It's less when you conflict with the writer and more if you conflict with the studio that you go to director jail.
Yeah, and you're dealing with some pretty strong personalities there in total, so...
Yes.
And, of course, William Hurt, who loved the script of this, by the way, he pretty much campaigned to do it and had a nice long meeting with Ken Russell, and there's one chair in the room, and nobody took it.
And he said he didn't care if he was in it. He just thought they should make it.
Yeah, and William Hurt was kind of sold because of his Betty Boop socks, which I can respect a Betty Boop sock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you get a movie made? Wear your cartoon socks.
Mm-hmm. All straight laced, and the socks are just that little hint.
Wear a nice suit and some Betty Boop socks and.
Or Spider-Man socks or any type of socks.
I got a Superman sock that would rock your world.
I have Spam socks.
You got spam socks?
Oh my god.
Socks. Yeah,
yeah. Cool. I work with somebody who has spam socks.
Yeah. I got Ash versus the Evil Dead, which just got canceled.
Yes, oh. We did hear that.
Wah.
Yeah.
Boo.
Oh well. I got the socks still.
Yeah.
And a season yet to watch. So,
yep.
I got three great seasons of that show. Yeah, this movie starred William Hurt making his feature film debut, Blair Brown, Bob Balaban, Charles Hage, and the rest of these guys were only had like one scene, but I want to try this name because it's just impossible. Theo Pengelis? Pengelis.
Oh, he's been in a little... Okay, this guy...
He played Echeveria. His character yeah. name's still hard to say.
Yes.
Yeah. And I recognized him because he was on Days of Our Lives. It's Tony DiMera.
That's funny.
I was like, this guy looks really familiar.
What's funny that he's on Days of Our Lives, that Trish recognized him.
Yeah. And, I'm not mentioning Drew Barrymore because she barely got any screen time. She was just one of the kids of the two leads, Eddie and Emily, who we basically see them get together and divorce in the same movie.
Mm-hmm. And then get back together again.
Get back together again. You know, shit happens between brainy people.
I think Drew Barrymore has like one line where like, mommy, are we cleaning up or something like that. That's it.
Yeah. Now, this is listed as a sci-fi horror thriller, and it is all of those things. But the one thing that they don't say is it's a love story. This movie's totally a love story.
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah. I think right at its core, it is a freaky-ass love story. Commenting on your state in the universe and what God might be in the eyes of science.
Yeah.
It's this weird marriage of religion and science, which in the 80s
the
were
condition,
that...
It's really dense. Like, yeah. It is really, really dense when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about like how naked this movie is, the uniqueness, like, I don't think I'm like, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, you haven't seen the movie, we're remaking it. The uniqueness of it is like being so naked that once everything is all stripped away, it is kind of meaningless. And that love you have for somebody else is all you have, mm-hmm. which is just kind of funny.
Yeah. And it takes William Hurt the entire movie to learn
get there.
This. Yeah.
Because he's very cerebral. Right? Mm-hmm. He's a scientist and he's looking for truth. They talk about that a lot in the movie, how all he believes in is the truth.
Well, not just that. He's just obsessive.
Yes. Yeah, he's very obsessive about finding the truth. And we're talking the truth of all things, like unlocking billions of years of memory within your own genes, in your genome, and finding God within yourself. He calls it the true self.
Yeah.
It's just middling and changing words, and there's a whole argument about that. And I'll play that as the Easter egg at the end of the whole drunken arguments about God and replacing the word of true self. And
well, then they say, what was it, the soul back to like the original soul or something? That's what the Brujo was talking about.
And it does touch on real science, the isolation tanks. There was a scientist that they pulled from who had studied with in these isolation tanks and would take hallucinogens and mind-altering drugs within the isolation tanks during those experiments as well. So there's stuff based on actual science in this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the language, as I understand,
very well researched.
Yeah. It's very well researched, yes.
And you can still, like, nowadays, you can go to, like, a tank. You can go to tank places and, like, pay to float for, like, an hour.
Where? Tanks R Us?
No, like Kensington? I can't remember what it's called.
No, you're supposed to go with, Tanks R Us.
Oh, Tanks R Us, I guess.
Tanks
well, no,
R Us.
But it's not about the tanks. It'd be like, you know, float away or something like that. Quiety, darky, floaty. That's what it is.
Drowned in a box. Apparently, it was their isolation tank was a real deal, so everybody got to try it out for a little while. And
oh, yeah, you could tell just by looking at it that it was one of those real isolation tanks from the 60s.
Yeah. Ken Russell found it very relaxing, and William Hurt did actually hallucinate in his.
Wow.
So
I love the isolation tank at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, the one that just looks like an old retrofitted
hot water tank
or something like that.
Well, the diving, he just had a diving bell around his head.
Yeah.
I like that, actually. I'm watching... When I'm watching movies...
I thought they were going to shoot him out of a torpedo tube.
Yeah, exactly. When I watch these movies, part of what I do when I watch them now is I look for the stuff that I can use for the promo gifs.
Nice.
Yeah, if you're not seeing of the really cool GIFs, whatever you want to call them, those pictures that move, but aren't video.
Starts with G and ends with if. We don't know what they're called.
Sam makes a bunch of those and posts them on our social media, mostly on the Twitter feeds. So go find us at Invasion Remake. And there's all sorts of cool shit to look at over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing our best to keep it visually entertaining as on that end of things, because we're an audio podcast. So why not do something visual on our social media?
Yeah. And hopefully you're putting them over on Instagram too.
Instagram's a pain in my ass.
Okay, so not a lot of content going to Instagram just yet.
Not yet. There's some things that I'm working on it.
If you got like fan art you want to submit to us, we can submit it there. That would be a great place to post your fan art. So if you got some fan art of the show and the episodes we've done and some of the bazillion catchphrases we've long forgotten.
yes, if you remember any of
them. Do some fan art and we'll post it over there on the Instagram.
With credit, of course.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Of
course. We're not just going to take it.
Yeah, no, we'll tag you on it and everything. So,
mm-hmm. Cool.
Make sure you get the credit where credit's due.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, back to Rat.
Back to Rat.
Very opening scene, I'm like, fuck. Very opening scene, I've got a promo GIF, right? And there's so many more in this movie because there's so many great visuals in it. The many-eyed goat head Christ thing.
Yeah. What was
that was this. I made a note of that where I'm like, that was an interesting iconography mixing of pagan and Catholicism.
I absolutely loved it. Yeah.
There's one mental, one of his trippy scenes, and you see all these people kind of sacrificing over a cliff. And that's actually from a 1935, I think, silent film called Dante's Inferno.
Yep.
That they obviously
based on hell
colorized. Yeah. This movie's also got some of the really early examples of CGI in it as well. I mean, they're
really noticeable now.
Yeah.
But they would have looked freaking awesome in 1980.
Yeah, and compositing in clever ways and near the end there as well.
Oh my
most,
god!
Most
yeah.
of the CG and the compositing happens in that end climax moment.
Yeah, and which is amazing. That still looked really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's. Shit that's going on You're with right. Hertz's arm, and that still looks really good. It still holds up.
Yeah, so much of it does.
I do believe Dick Smith had a lot to do, the legendary Dick Smith had a lot to do with the special effects makeup in this film.
Oh, that was the other part of the troubles, is their special effects team quit and they had to replace them.
That also happened, yes.
Yeah.
The fact that this movie got made at all
is pretty impressive, yeah.
Yeah, Dykstra, I can't remember his first name, but he's another big 80s effects guy. He was the one who walked away from this movie. He went on to a lot of big things as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure what the curse was on this film and as far as getting it produced goes, but they did it, and I think they turned out a pretty decent piece of film. As I'm watching, I'm like, fuck, I don't know if we can remake this.
Yeah.
I mean, we can, but I don't know how much we can make better.
Yeah. Speaking of cursed films, what the fuck with Don Quixote, eh?
Yeah.
Oh my god. The unfilmable film. It seems no matter what anybody
so
tries
close,
it.
And then he gets angina.
Yeah.
People thought he had a stroke there. And, oh god. Yeah, go look up all the heartache of the making of Don Quixote.
I mean it's been so troubled that they actually made a documentary about how troubled this fucking movie is.
And that was before they made this one.
Yes.
That's hitting Cannes this weekend. But hey, we're in the home stretch now. It's almost made and it almost killed him.
Yeah.
I mean, 77, he finally got it out, that monkey off his back.
Yes. Yeah.
Poor Terry Gilliam. I think the sign should have told him, stay the fuck away from Don Quixote.
I don't know. He's cursed in some way with Don Quixote.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring this back to Rat by running the trailer, and we will talk more Altered States.
In the basement of one of the country's leading medical schools, Dr. Edward Jessup, candidate for a Nobel Prize, is conducting the most dangerous experiment in the history of science. And the subject of the experiment is himself.
Ask him what kind of an experience I can expect.
What happens during these blackout periods is you get the feeling of phenomenal acceleration, like you're being shot out over millions, billions of years. Time simply obliterates.
Your eyes are shooting up with an untested drug that stacks up in the brain and works in the nucleus of the cell, and you don't call that dangerous.
I'm asking you to put the experiment off until we understand a little more in order to minimize the risk.
No way.
I'm really frightened. We could be screwing around with this whole genetic structure now. How do we stop this?
We've got millions of years stored away in that computer bank we call our minds. We have got trillions of dormant genes in us, our whole evolutionary past. Perhaps I've tapped into that.
Be on to something that is beyond our own comprehension. Now, because I believe him, I want this thing stopped.
The hell was that? You okay?
If you love me, Eddie, get fired!
Altered States.
Yeah, that was trippy too.
It's hard to play these trailers because you kind of really need the visual for this one to make an impact.
You do. So go watch the trailer, then come back.
We'll wait.
Still waiting.
Waiting.
Why are you listening? Just hit pause. Go watch. Yeah. Go to YouTube.
That's the fun bit. You can hit pause on us.
We're watching. Why aren't you doing it? Go do it.
Don't make a sandwich. What's going on?
Okay, well, I'm going to assume you've watched it now, and we're going to go talk more Altered States here. Those hallucination scenes, they're really hard to decipher at times.
Yes. They are.
There's one, just the really trippy one, where he goes to the native village, and they fire him up with some sort of peyote or whatever. Wow, that one's crazy cool, because that's one where you have the people jumping over the cliff, and then at one point he sees his now wife in the movie, Emily Jessup, and she's morphs from this lizard. The lizard is a reoccurring theme.
Monitor lizard, yeah.
And he does wind up murdering it in his hallucination.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't.
We don't actually see it, but we see it dead after he comes out of it.
Its insides are ripped out.
Yeah. And we see his wife kind of sit up and morph from this lizard into his wife, which eventually they kind of turn into sand and they're slowly eroded away.
It was beautiful.
It was so well done. Yeah. I mean, it goes on a long time.
It is really long, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm keeping that in the remake, just to let you know.
Yeah,
you need to see that erosion, I think.
Maybe that little bit. I mean, I think the remake should maybe tighten up some of that stuff. And it should, whatever the visual allegories are, that should be represent the director's kind of vision, I think.
Yeah, but
I don't think they should be the same. And the commentary
on
religion
one, yeah.
and science is separated so much further these days that... Trying to come up with a different take on this is going to be interesting.
It is going to be very interesting, yeah. But that particular scene, just because it was clearly a representation of the erosion of their relationship.
Yeah.
That's good.
Tied in with Original Sin, where she's eating that little bit of pudding. It's pudding sin. She's eating it, then she offers it to him, and then there's a snake wrapped around his head.
Right. That's religious iconography. There's a lot of religious iconography in here.
Absolutely, sure. because yeah, this is the quest for God. Whether it be God within yourself or God.
Yeah, we see them. They're not, when he's single, he starts off single, meets her. We see this all. They're married within the first 20 minutes of this movie.
And divorcing
within the first 20 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, you do a quick hop ahead.
And she loves him. He loves her, but he, being the science-minded guy, just so focused on what he's
really
trying to do.
He sucks at it.
Yeah, he sucks at being a father and a husband, and he can't focus on them until he gets this thing solved. And he just views his family as a distraction.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. By the end, we do see, once he gets to the other side and sees that there's fuck all there, at least because he's got no memory of all the trippy shit he's gone through. And he's like, there's nothing there. There's nothing to grab onto. So he figures out what's most important. I don't know if they're going to just keep phasing for the rest of their lives into weird.
She
turned his wife inside out and he's turning into some glob of flesh.
See, I thought she was burning. Because they show her kind of melting away at one point.
Yeah, I thought she kind of got turned inside out. But yeah, there's this weird lava-ish effect inside her body going on. They don't seem to be too bothered when it turns off. But you'd figure that would be... that there might be some long-term effects of that.
Yeah, like what if he has a bad dream?
And that's the thing is, I mean, he says he feels fine. And then all of a sudden you're in this climactic moment where he's... becomes this being of energy, and she's...
Yeah, I get the feeling. I mean, they don't hint at it, but their relationship's solid by the end of the film. Mm-hmm. But is there substance? Like, I mean, I don't know if that phasing is just going to keep going and going, because he felt fine, and then boom, there's some sort of wacko thing that he drags his wife into going on.
Well, it's like he's gone, like,
just this intense release of energy.
He's gone kind of X-Men, really. If he thinks of something, it, like he says, you think of it as real, you have to make it unreal. He does have to make it unreal. His mind does. He's like, he really is just like an X-Man and can make stuff happen.
That's a good analogy, actually. But I think that at the end, the whole idea is that his realization that his love for her is important is supposed mm-hmm. to have grounded him to the point where he's now has whatever's happening to him under control. Mm-hmm. That's what I got from it anyhow, is that she becomes his ground, because he sees what's happening to her because he's lost control. So he now keeps it in control because of her.
Yeah. During the film, we kind of see, as he's getting closer to what his ultimate goal is, initially he's just having some weird hallucinations about God and his family or whatever. After he takes that peyote and gets a sample of it and mixes it with the isolation tank, that's when things really start happening. You know, he's freaking out in the tank and making some grunting sounds. And his wife is actually a...
Anthropologist,
studies apes. Got to compare it to one of her excursions to Africa and some baboon sounds.
Yeah. And they're separated at this point.
Yeah,
she's been separated. Gone away with the children.
For about a year now.
Yeah. But yeah, so he can't make anything. So they take him to go get an X-ray. Like, it's just, he comes out of the tank. He's got blood on his mouth, and for some reason, white paste.
No,
it's manifested because he ate a goat.
Yeah, he dreamt he ate a goat. We don't actually see that in one of the hallucinations, but it is recorded.
Yeah,
because they're recording. He's trying to vocalize as much as he can what he's seeing, and half the time he can't remember it anyway afterwards. But
and I actually really liked how they did that. Instead of showing you that particular hallucination,
it's a good way to get around a lot of effects and tell you some of the other science, because you do need to see other people reacting to this as well.
Yeah, and because he spends so much time in that altered state, this movie would be really, really challenging to watch if it was all his trips with just these short bits of dialogue in between the trips, which is what it would have been otherwise.
But this also illustrates the whole thing, like where his friends, like his one doctor friend, is completely skeptical about all this. He's like, yeah, he's just having hallucinations. None of this is real. Yeah, and that's where it shows you that part of it. Yeah. He can't see anything happening.
Yeah, that was Charles Haid, who plays Mason.
I was
Mason
so happy Parrish. To see him. I'd forgotten he was in this. And I really love this actor.
Yeah.
You know, I can't really place him in my brain of other, if I've seen him elsewhere, but I did really like him in this movie.
Once you hear his voice, for some reason that always tweaks it for me. Because his accent and his voice tell you.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. And
I'm sure.
I can't think of a single other thing. He's one of those I know that guy actors for me.
Oh, yeah. He was that guy that was
that guy from that thing?
Yeah. Guy that was in that thing that one time.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, but yeah, he's one of those actors for me. And every time I see him, I'm like, oh, I forgot how much I love this actor.
Yeah.
And they don't really give him. What's funny is his introduction, which is that step forward where they're getting separated, and it's William Hurt's coming home with the kids, and he just kind of runs up, and that's his introduction. He just shows up.
No, actually, he was at the when
was he at the party?
He was at the party. He was getting drunk.
I didn't remember him then,
but he wasn't wearing the suit, so he looks more relaxed. But I didn't actually either until I looked at the trailer when I was lining it up and looking at some other clips to use for this episode, and I'm like, oh, he was introduced earlier. He just was in the background of it all, so you don't notice him.
See, I was taking notes at the time. That's probably what happened.
Yeah, and that's a sign of a good direction if you're if you're interested in characters without making it really blatant. Right, you see them somewhere in the background of an earlier scene, and then you see
them. There were lots of people at that party, but only two of them are recurring characters, really.
Well, there's only four characters in this movie.
Yeah,
ultimately, I mean, aside from the guide and the shaman, there's not a lot of other real characters in this movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't even cast the Bruja or the.
No, I didn't either, because they're one scene and it's fairly short.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a very small cast film, which made it really easy to cast, but at the same time, it limits what you can do as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, this story is really about a small group of people around this one guy who's experiencing this thing.
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to fill the cast, you could throw in like a lab assistant or something like that, or some students who are participating in the earlier studies. But for the most part, it's really about two people. Like you said, ultimately the bottom line on this is a love story, which is very Ken Russell. If you think about it, all of his other films, like especially Gothic, it's a love story more than anything else. It's set in a different...
I don't care what college they're at. No college would fund experiments that is straight to human trials. Yeah. Like that they're doing. You get the feeling they were kind of doing these experiments on the sly.
Well, yeah. I wonder if there wasn't something like that was happening, because it says it's like kind of in the 60s.
It is the 60s. And the boiler, this upright boiler isolation tank was just an isolation tank. They were doing psychological studies, which they would do in a university.
Yeah, no, I think they initially, at the beginning, they were stumbling onto something with their experiments.
Yeah, and it was a legitimate study without chemical acceleration. Yeah.
And he did mention at one point that he'd worked with apes for so long, but he couldn't get any farther because apes can't tell you what's going on in their heads.
But at least he was responsible to do it with himself, although there was they were doping up some students. I used the Easter egg at the beginning of this episode here, and I recognized it from probably one of my favorite Ministry songs.
Nice. Yeah, I guess that was sort of the thing. You said, put out a flyer, say like $10, be a guinea pig, and that's what they do.
Yeah, and LSD trials did happen in the 60s.
Yeah. That would have been right down the hall from Venkman, right?
Yep.
As he's frying students.
Yeah. Venkman and Stance and Spengler.
Yeah, so, I mean, these types of studies were done, right? Mm-hmm. And there were waivers and all kinds of fun shit that are involved, especially back when psychedelics weren't illegal, right? Because LSD wasn't a controlled substance until the mid to late 70s, I think.
Yeah, and I guess they did do the tests on the substance that he took, whatever it was. It was mixed with his own blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff looked disgusting.
It did. You remember the soup with the hands and heads floating in it in Conan?
Yeah, it's like that. It looks like
the eyeball soup in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom.
Yeah, it didn't look appetizing. Yeah.
Not at all.
You didn't get the chunky body parts.
But that's not the point, I think. And the whole thing is you have to take that little spoon where you're just kind of skimming the liquid off the top. Whatever else is in there is just in there. It's like a chunky soup where you eat around the chunks.
Yeah, that was probably the toughest part of the movie to watch.
Eat the bay leaves.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the only thing in this movie that actually made me uncomfortable. It was like, ugh.
Yeah, ugh.
Yeah, and there was no need for it to look so unappealing.
No, but that's cinema. That's cinema.
Yeah, it's mushroom soup. Really, that's what it is. It was mushroom soup.
Well, that was the thing. The point of the whole thing was, like, what price will you pay for this discovery? And it's gross, but apparently you have to.
But he obviously finds a way to synthesize it instead and take it in a less repulsive manner.
Do not try this at home.
Yeah, there's a funny bit there with Haig's character, whose name escapes
Mason.
Me. Mason. Mason. I was going to say Malcolm. Mason is talking about how the very first scene in the story where you see him, where he's talking about Eric shooting up. He keeps saying, he's shooting up. The other guy says, no, he didn't shoot up. He just drinks it.
Yeah, Arthur's like, no, we just drink it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because it's a very funny way of sort of pointing out the way people perceive drug users. They're all shooting up drugs and they're all crazy and out of control. Then there's the opposite side where it's like, no, we're not shooting it up. It's orally ingested.
Well, I think it's also kind of the juxtaposition between the two characters as well, because Arthur's more kind of like loosey-goosey when it comes to drugs, but Mason's very straight about it. Like he'll have some pot, but he's like, no, beyond that, no.
And I mean, he's a physician and surgeon. He's not just a research scientist, right? So he's got a very different perspective on things.
He's like head of endocrinology. That's his specialty.
Do you keep this in the 60s? Do you move it to now?
That was a tough thing that I was thinking about is how do you pull it off with moving it to modern times?
The ultimate goal is still something that you could still try to tell that story modernly, but
you'd have to move out of a university setting then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would.
You know what? You can, because there's two things. Like I was saying, there is a place.
You move it into a shitty university.
Yeah. But I'm saying there is places you can go to just float, right? Mm-hmm. And like people
we've established you just go to Tanks R Us.
And then people go on trips like down to like South America, to like ayahuasca, and do those trips down there. So it's still a thing people go and do. So they would just try and transport up here. There's investigations on like how to use like LSD or ecstasy to help people through PTSD. So there's lots of other drug stuff that's happening now.
Maybe they have to do their studies abroad, like Amsterdam.
Yeah, like that's certainly another thing.
Or maybe they go back to South America. Because part of what my thing is I had kind of a very Hispanic cast, mm-hmm. and I put it to like the lead character was like a super doctor, because he talks about losing his faith in the original movie.
Yes.
So part of his faith would be like kind of like his past back in South America, and then he returns to kind of rediscover that.
And that would be sort of one way to look at it, and it certainly puts them closer to the source of their study, or the method of their study.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But you know, maybe you change it a little bit, and it's they find this unintended side effect of a clinical drug trial, and he's studying that, and in the process starts this search for truth. That then you can leave it set in the U.S. and this side effect doesn't show up until they start their human trials, because monkeys can't tell you what's going on,
and neither can primordial men.
Yes.
we kind of jumped over the scene where he was basically turned into a caveman running around the streets of the city, and then eventually going to the zoo. Again, we go to the zoo.
And that was what made me think of this movie.
Was from, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, you should. It's almost like this is a two-parter.
Ken Russell's zoos. Also, fun fact, the x-ray technician, John Larroquette, also in Cat
Thank
People.
Thank you for that. Yeah, because I'm like, no way.
I thought that was John Larroquette, but I didn't find him in the credits.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he had no dialogue, right?
Yeah.
He was an extra. No, he was in the x-ray technician, like going, look, I'm swamped. And then he's like, who's the radiologist on call? It's like Vishnitz.
Full on screen then.
There we go. So, you know what, last week I was looking for the Ken Russell connection. But we found a John Larroquette connection, so I win.
There's more connections, I swear.
Congratulations, here's a coupon to Tanks R Us.
Thank you. I could use a good float. You know what,
we all do some freaking privacy here.
Most people complain about being alone too much. I very rarely get to be alone. No slight on my wife or my family, but sometimes you do need alone time.
Sometimes you really do.
Oh, I live alone, so my whole apartment's in an isolation tank.
If I go into my tub, there we are.
There we are.
Although it's not long enough to really stretch out like a proper isolation tank. Yeah, I think really, that would be the dream.
You need a good soaker tub.
And the thing about those isolation tanks is they are set to body temperature. The whole idea is that you're deprived of all the rest of your senses.
Right.
Which is why your brain goes into overdrive.
Oh, and they're super kind of super salinated so that you are super buoyant.
Yes, so you are literally floating, and it's supposed to be kind of like being in the womb again, apparently. I've never actually done it.
You did it at least once.
Yes. For comparison, I mean.
There we go.
Yeah, you have to go back.
Yes. To my memory...
Yeah, we don't know.
But now we need the isolation tank and the drugs to get you back to your earliest memories and being in the womb, which probably isn't the greatest of memories.
Well, when he talks about it, it's this very incredible terror. I'm like, oh, okay, there we go.
And, you know, that was – I never made that connection until while we were talking about it. But
pulsing,
that's exactly it.
Fleshy walls.
That's the whole – and that might be why it accelerates when he goes into the isolation tank, because it brings him that one step closer to being in the womb.
Right when everything was still going okay, and right before shit went bad. Like, I was a breech baby. I'm like, not going out. Don't like it. I don't care for what I've heard out there. I don't care to see what's out there. I am fine where I am.
Fuck that. I'm staying in.
I've heard what's going on out there. I do not care for it.
She's like, nope, not having that. I'll stay here for a little bit.
I know,
longer.
It's cold and cruel. I'm not going.
You guys stay out there, do what you do.
I'm a twin. I just kept getting kicked all the time. So I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that would be hard. Because you're not really alone. Yeah. Oh my God, imagine this movie with twins.
Oh,
maybe we should.
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
One of them's super doing this, and the other one's like experiencing a bit of it and doesn't understand why.
I'm thinking more like they merged into one person.
like the gooey thing that William Hurt becomes?
Yeah, he did come kind of gooey. Yeah. Or you could have like the sort of the whole Elvis thing where there's twins, but only one survives. Our character doesn't know that he's a twin until he regresses.
Ooh, I like that too.
And discovers that there's two minds, and, mm-hmm. and it could really mess with him.
Yeah, that's and you really know why good. We can get away with this? Because Patty Chayefsky's not around to argue with us.
Yes. Nope. Plus, we're remaking it. It's our go.
It's our go.
We're writing it. We're taking the source material and we're rewriting it.
That's right.
And we're not even rewriting it so much as reimagining what it could be for a modern audience.
Yeah. Mm.
That is kind of a cool idea, the twins.
Yeah. I would maybe do it from an atheist point of view, who's just purely mm-hmm. science. And through the delusions is maybe discovering faith for the first time.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I mean, I'm not a strong on faith myself, but it should ride the line. It shouldn't lean one way or the other like this movie does. It mm-hmm. should kind of take both subjects and view them clinically.
Like a proper debate.
Yeah.
And each side gets equal time.
And exactly. you could do the whole thing, like you could keep that part that I thought was really good where he talks about like extreme schizophrenics. For some reason, there's a lot of religious iconography in what they're seeing and hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't know why, just happens.
Yeah, no, there's lots of really interesting ways that you could...
Because you're talking research, maybe that could be part of the research, yeah. like schizophrenia.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe,
treatment for schizophrenia.
There we go. We've got our tie-in, right? So, yeah, and that's where they come across the psychotropic effects of this clinical trial. He just...
And maybe schizophrenia and Alzheimer's.
Ooh,
he's
yes.
He's trying to recover memory and...
There
you know,
go.
Through his own hallucinations, discovers he can go deeper than your own current memory, but like the memory...
To genetic memory, yeah.
To genetic memory, right from the base of the beginning of everything.
Nice. Ooh, loving this.
Yeah.
Loving this direction.
Yeah, liking that. Make it less about his search for...
I mean, granted, they did do kind of do that in the Planet of the Apes.
But we're taking a different take on it.
That's right. We're not creating smart apes. We are trying to get to...
We're making the man into the ape.
Yeah.
That's just what we're doing.
Yeah, we're going the other way around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few caveman-esque movies in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Was looking up this. It was like Iceman, which I really loved. That was one of my favorite movies with Timothy Hutton.
Yeah.
We rented that a lot.
2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Planet of the Cave Bear.
Yeah, there are quite a few.
There's more. Way more.
Oh, Quest for Fire.
Quest for Fire.
Yes, there
Big
we
one.
Go.
Big one.
Huge one. There's a fascination with our primordial selves or in the 80s. And you know what? There's something fascinating about it, to be mm-hmm. honest.
Do you keep the caveman?
Yeah. I think that regression is important.
Mm-hmm.
I think that regressing back to your primitive self.
Well, I think it's more of I don't know if it was a caveman so much as that missing leg.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, he was not.
I loved how they did that, too, because you'd see him making great leaps and, you know, he had the monkey toes and, whoever they had doing that, obviously that wasn't William Hurt, but somebody who's very
athletic. No, it's they're credited
separately.
Up into
the pipes there?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Because it was quick.
It was.
Plus, it's a much smaller person than William Hurt because he's very tall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a different person doing it. I don't know. I was when I was watching it a couple of times, like when he's in the shower and he sees his feet
mm-hmm.
turn into like primitive feet. It was sort of at that point I wasn't sure if anything
After
was happening.
After sleeping with one of his students.
Oh, I wrote this down too. After you fucked someone, do you still call them Dr. Jessup?
She was only doing it to raise her GPA.
My answer is no.
It was all for the GPA.
I get to use your first name. Are you all right, Dr. Jessup? You just fucked him. Call him Paul or whatever. Or Eddie. Call him Eddie.
You know, even though he wanted to stay focused, he still needed to get his rocks off once in a while, I guess.
Well, she's a woman who wasn't a distraction to him.
That's true.
And the other thing, too, is don't forget he's getting in touch with his primitive self.
True.
Right? Which is going to increase the libido.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's more id.
Eat and breed.
Yeah.
That's just primal needs. Eat, breed.
So provide, protect, procreate.
Yep.
Just survive till that. Like he talks about surviving just that night. That was very primitive, very in the now.
Yeah, and that's the way. But I could see him having intimate relationships with more than one woman because that would be, like you said, right down to the id, right? More mm-hmm. id, right? Where he feels that need and desire more than he used to.
Yeah, and see, I also look at it as another way. As it's if it's just these random students, like he sees Maggie as sort of, is Maggie or his
Emily.
Wife? Emily. I got the wrong one. Maggie's his daughter. Emily is more of a distraction to him. He can't be intimate with somebody he's like in love with. Otherwise, that will distract him.
Yeah, and I think we could dispense with the whole meeting part, and we could already have them hooked up at the beginning of this movie. And use some of the flashbacks, some of the hallucination to tell their backstory a little bit. So we can actually come in near the end of that relationship as they start splitting off.
It would get you into into the nuts and bolts of the story a lot faster.
Yeah.
Because that first 35 minutes, nothing fucking happens.
Oh.
No, this is 102 minutes. So it's not a terribly long movie, but it sure feels like it.
It does, times. Yeah.
Conceptually, what you can do, we're talking about he's using the stuff to recover memories. Maybe some of the memories he recovers are like going back in time to when he first meets Emily, and that's how you do it.
Well, because he doesn't seem to prize what's in the now. No. He's only interested in what he doesn't know.
He's looking elsewhere.
And he's not realizing all the stuff he actually has, and that's part of the story. And I think you can point that a lot better by doing it as more of a flashback story mm-hmm. as he's recovering these memories and prizing these memories, and he's now challenged by the now and the ultimate truth.
Ooh. Yeah, and it certainly makes the revelation, his personal revelation at the end of the movie, more effective.
And mm-hmm. restarting the love story from there, that feels like the beginning of like just the second love story.
Yeah. You don't have to go through a movie's worth of story in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We've already seen three acts in 20 minutes.
It was 35 mm-hmm. minutes because yeah. I had to pause it.
Was it 35?
To do something. And I paused at 35 minutes.
Yeah.
35 minutes before you get into the events yeah. of the movie.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. You had to look at it because sometimes you're like, okay, so they're doing it and then they spend the night together. And they're like, wait, they have kids? And I'm like, oh, it's a time jump. Yeah. Okay, I got it.
Basically a sitcom where they get together, get married, have kids, get divorced. 35
Two episodes.
Minutes.
Yep.
That's 35 minutes.
Yeah. No, I was surprised because that it was a full 35 minutes, but it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can move things along a little faster, and it gives you a little more time with other characters because now you've got a little more time to build on that. Because, man, we see Arthur quite a bit. We don't get a sense of who he is. And same mm-hmm. with Mason's more of the pragmatic kind of personality, and he's thinking about the university and thinking his buddy's off his rocker, but he still stands by his friend.
He's the counterbalance, uh-huh. but he's also loyal.
Yeah.
Right? Which is important. It's important to the character and to the movie. And Arthur, his character, you're right, isn't very well fleshed out. He's devoted mm-hmm. to Eddie.
Yeah. Like,
he is devoted to Eddie in this research.
Yeah.
But there's no reason, they don't explain why.
Yeah. Right?
And I mean, he's the narrator in the opening scenes, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and after they recover Eddie from lockup after he's been found naked at the zoo, mm-hmm. and there's a big argument of what's going on. Actually, the big energy release, actually, yeah. that was the scene where it's just this explosive amount of energy and everybody's getting thrown around the room. There's a big argument of what's next. Yeah. And
yeah. And see, I always wondered, like, they talk about weed. I'm pretty sure he didn't say that he drinks it. I thought at one point he said, we drink it. And I thought that there was probably times where he went into the isolation tank and you just never saw them. So, like, I thought his character was sort of like he wasn't getting where Eddie was getting. And I think that was sort of a frustration because I think he has the same ideas as
and
Eddie.
And I think we should see at least his two friends do that, especially the one, the non-believer guy. I think he should. And I get the feeling he does it more out of fear than anything else. You're trying to unlock something that shouldn't be unlocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason it's locked.
Yeah, and I mean, he should start off just the negative Nancy, but I think he should go through it and go, we need to leave this alone.
Oh, and you should have the whole thing to always like, think about your primitive self. Think about your id. If everybody mm-hmm. listened to their id all the time, it would be chaos. It would be anarchy. People would be dying. It wouldn't work. Yeah.
And what if we had a scene, that scene with the caveman running around? What if everybody's gone through it once already, and Eddie triggers a transformation in the other two, so we have a kind of a small pack running around.
That feels very Buffy to me.
I didn't even think Buffy until that moment. So they're not werewolves.
No, but Buffy, there's a whole episode in Buffy where these college kids turn into cavemen.
Wow.
Wasn't there a caveman sitcom?
Well, now I don't want to do it.
Through spiked beer that's been spiked with magic to turn them into primordial beings. So,
and then there was that caveman sitcom.
What?
There was a sitcom, but caveman. There was like the Geico caveman who were part of a commercial.
Oh, God,
and
you're right. I totally remember that.
Either I blocked it out or I never knew it existed.
Oh, it was, I don't even
think you got two episodes out.
Yeah, it didn't even make a season. It was canceled almost as fast as it was made.
Because it's a bad fucking idea.
It was a bad fucking idea. Yeah. Well, I think we're ready to move on to some casting here. Our plot isn't fully coalesced yet, but I think we got some good broad strokes.
We're not done talking. So
no, we're not. Yeah. I'm hoping some of our casting will prompt some ideas.
But I like the direction of how he comes upon to start this journey. That's a really good place to start. I think we figured out how you can bring it up and it makes sense.
Yeah, in a more scientific way.
And modernize it. Yeah,
and I certainly like the flashbacks of how these people get together. I think we're still arguing whether it's going to be modernized or period. I think we've decided it's going to go be modern.
Well, yeah, we wouldn't have to go through all of this changing of the way that of the revelation of how they sort of come across this experience if we weren't modernizing it, because they were just living in the 60s, we could leave it the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the 60s one is very loosey-goosey. We're just doing it to see what happens. Yeah. And this one, they're probably doing it for money and research.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's starting off is one thing, and
and his motivation is now different, right? It is not just for science.
Yeah, he could be secretly doing these other experiments on his off hours.
Yeah,
because he's got the equipment.
Exactly, but it's still about money. It's like if we can find a way to market right?
Yeah, and that would be why Mason's trying to keep it all hush.
Yeah, daytime is their work; nighttime is his work.
Yeah,
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm going to start off with some casting here because I'm a little shaky in my casting. So when I'm really confident in my casting, I like to go last.
You go last.
So this one, I'm like, I like my cast, though. For my director, I went with Vincenzo Natali. He directed Cube and Splice.
Nice.
Ooh, very good.
Yeah. So I think we got somebody there who can do some of the more twisted visuals that this movie might require. For my Eddie Jessup, I went with Frank Grillo from The Purge.
Ah.
Oh, okay, yes.
I went with Lily Rabe for Emily Jessup, and you might best remember her right now from American Horror Story. But yep. I love her. She's great. For my Arthur Rosenberg, I went with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, yay.
Okay, that works for me.
Yeah.
Oh, Paul. Love Paul.
And for my Mason, even though he looks way younger, he is actually the same age of most of this cast, Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus doesn't look young.
He looks a little grizzled. That's good.
Yeah. He's got enough grizzle too. So, yeah. But I could see him maybe being. It's a very.
I think
different
we can make Mason older.
Yeah. Well, you could. I just. If these guys are friends, but yeah. I mean, Paul Giamatti's definitely older than the rest of this cast. So.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Science is not ageist.
No. Right?
Well, Norman Reedus isn't young either. Like, he's older than both of us by a bit.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking with this cast.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to compare him to myself.
No. But, I mean, when we're talking, like, time. Yeah, like, I think he's close 50. To Giamatti as well.
Yeah, he's
like, he's
50.
Closer to Giamatti than he is
no,
to...
No. I mean, my cast is way older than the original cast anyway. But
because
Frank Grillo, Lily Rabe's definitely the youngest of my cast. But him and Frank Grillo are both in that. We're getting really close to 50.
Yes.
Yes. No, I like your cast.
Yeah, that's my four. I didn't cast beyond that because the rest of the guys were such small scenes.
They're ancillary characters. Yeah. They can be any. I know that guy from that movie, though, that one time.
Yeah.
From that thing one time, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. You know that guy from that thing that I saw that one that time?
There's a documentary. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was like the guy from that thing. And it's all these character actors where you're like, that guy. Like you watch the whole documentary and like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. I watched it. It was really good.
It's so fun.
I got to find that one. Yeah.
It was on Netflix. That's where I watched it, but I don't know if it's still on there or not.
No, I'll have to go look.
I've been watching a lot of documentaries lately.
Cool. There's lots of good docs on Netflix.
There are lots of them. There's pages and pages of them. I've been really enjoying it. It's been nice to get away from...
I've been mainly reading this week, but yeah, there's a documentary series, The Toys That Made Us.
Yeah.
It's a series, so...
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Oh, yeah, and it's totally, being an 80s kid, so... G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, those are the toys
that made
us.
Do they play the old cartoons? The old commercials?
I haven't seen it yet. I said I got to.
Okay. Like, if they play the old commercials, that's going to be awesome.
I would hope so.
So would I, yeah.
Those are great. I loved when those commercials came on.
Where the kids are like, woohoo! like they're playing with his stuff.
Yeah, you, there were some times where you weren't watching Saturday morning cartoons for the cartoons. You were watching them for the toy commercials.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would watch Transformers and hope there was a Transformer commercial in there,
for a new toy, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And then it had more animation in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sam, how about you give me your cast there?
Okay. My very, very long cast. So I knew who I wanted for Eddie Jessup before I even watched the movie. Because I have seen the movie before, and I remembered really enjoying it. So I was already thinking of Alexander Skarsgård.
Okay.
In that role.
Nice.
Because I just watched him in Mute. Great movie if you haven't seen it.
Have to watch that. That
it
looks good.
It is so good. It's really, really good.
It's the same universe as...
Moon.
That's it. Thank you.
Even though Sam Rockwell is in it as a different character, briefly, it's in the same universe. Okay. And moving on to my Emily Jessup. I wanted to stay with a redhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept thinking about Molly's Game and how good Jessica Chastain was in that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's
haven't seen it, go see it.
Yes.
Rent it or, you know, buy it.
Or I think it might even be on Netflix now.
Oh, might that'd be good. I'd watch it again.
Yeah, it's really rewatchable. But yeah, she was fantastic in that. She's the right age there. That mid to 30s to early 40s. And I wanted them a little bit older for the leads, especially considering they have kids and so on. For my Arthur Rosenberg... I went with, because Arthur's supposed to be kind of comic relief in a way, so I went with Jonah Hill.
Because
he can play the straight and the...
Yeah, it's kind of why I went with Paul Giamatti.
He's got the Balaban hair kind of, too.
Lighten it up a bit.
Well, and I wanted to, I wanted to keep that particular character at least... Rosenberg, he's Jewish, right?
Sure.
And I don't think Hill is actually Jewish, but certainly if he lets his hair grow out a little bit, he gets the hair and so on. So he played Jewish fairly well.
And we've seen him do serious roles.
And he's very, very good at it. He's a very great crossover actor.
Yeah.
And then for my Mason Parrish, I went with Mahershala Ali.
Ali, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Right. Again, about the right age. Fantastic actor.
He's fantastic, yeah.
And he does serious so well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like... Yeah.
I initially was going to cast Liev Schreiber as my Eddie, and I'm not sure how he didn't wind up getting into my movie, but...
Yeah, I mean, because that leads me to that thing about William Hurt's voice, which is such a unique and present voice.
Yeah.
And Liev Schreiber has one of those voices, too.
Yep.
He really does.
And then for my director, I went with Richard Kelly, who directed Donnie Darko.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you want to get into sort of that psychological... stuff, he's really good at it.
Yeah, was it called The Button? Was that the one?
Or yes.
Was it about a button?
The Box?
The Box?
With the button in it.
The Box with the button in it.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Which is based on
The Twilight Zone is The Button, and then I think in the movie it's The Box.
Yeah, do they even give credit to that Twilight Zone episode? Because it was totally the Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, I don't know if they do.
But only I picked him because he's very good at psychological stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another great one who can...
I wasn't with Cronenberg because I really liked the body horror in this.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's so obvious.
Yeah, and he's pulling away from that kind of stuff, the body horror stuff, although one more would be nice.
It would be nice to get one more body horror out of Cronenberg. If you're listening, David, your Canadian fans are asking.
Yeah.
Just one
more. You know, that the crime stuff he did lately.
It's really good.
It's really good, and there's still lots of gore.
Yes,
exactly.
Still very hostile.
But I just want Cronenberg to make me nauseous one more time.
I know, when you're sentimental for the nausea and
the confusion. Uncomfortable feeling you have when you watch one of those movies.
Sometimes I get through a movie, I'm like, I'm not sure what I would just watch, but I think I liked it.
Yeah, you feel a bit gross, but okay.
Yeah, I think I liked it.
I felt that way after this movie, to be honest. I did have to take a few minutes to just sort of let it sit, because it is one of those movies that where you watch it and you're going, I am not sure what I just watched. I know I enjoyed watching it, but I don't know if I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, I struggled with the director. I went through tons and I couldn't settle on one, so I don't have one.
Well,
because I was doing this at 4 o'clock in the morning.
If you went through tons, there should be a couple in your head.
Yeah, but I was doing it at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I don't remember. I just remember going through IMDb.
Well, Sam didn't pick him. You can have David Cronenberg.
I'll take Cronenberg then.
I'll assign you one.
I will take I will actually take Cronenberg. And when we were talking about Gilliam earlier, I'm like, I can kind of see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gilliam would be very good at it too.
Yeah, there'd be less body horror in Gilliam. He'd make it a little more fantasy-ish. But he does like his twisted stuff.
And, well, I kept going. I wanted to go back to like Anna Lily Amirpour, but I use her a lot, so I didn't want to do that one again.
Okay.
That's just where I sat. But yeah, like I said, I made it sort of where it's he's getting back to his Hispanic roots. So that's a very Hispanic cast is what I've gone with.
Okay.
So for Eddie, I didn't call him Jessup. I'm just going with first names now because I've changed a lot of stuff.
That's fair.
So Eddie, Diego Luna.
Mm-hmm.
For Emily, Natalie Morales. And then I gender switched Arthur, made Antonia, and put Salma Hayek in there. No, sorry. Yeah, May Antonia. I'm kind of flipping between this 2-1 because I've got Drew Barrymore and Salma Hayek as a couple.
Sure.
And if we're talking comic relief, it probably should be Drew Barrymore. Although Salma Hayek can kind of do it as well.
She does comedy very, very well, actually.
So, yeah, maybe I'll leave it Salma Hayek, Antonia.
Yeah, and I watch Drew Barrymore as just the
connective. You
know, yeah, the connective tissue to the original. I feel way younger in this movie. Yeah,
I know.
was she like 4?
Yeah,
1980. Yeah. This is pre ET.
Like, see, if she regressed in this movie, she'd be like, I just remember my parents' divorce.
she'd be a great if you wanted to gender swap and she make have her Eddie.
You could have her Eddie.
I'm not a big Barrymore fan.
Yeah, I
do like her. Like, Santa Clarita Died is what made me think of her. Plus,
I might have to give that a go. That does look kind of good.
And then for Mason, I for some reason was just looking for a Southern actor, and I don't know why. I was watching Will and Grace, and I'm like, Harry Connick Jr. I just want to see him in a movie again. I don't know if he'd be good. I'd like to try it.
Harry Connick Jr. He's quite talented as an actor.
Actually, yeah, he's talented.
He's that Southern. The Southern guy I wanted to hear.
I like the idea of Harry Connick in that, yeah.
In the movie. Then for the guy down south, I had Jason Mantzoukas because I just like him.
Yours sounds more comedic.
And the Brujo is Edward James Olmos because we were doing The Road to El Dorado, and I like that.
Okay.
And then the security guard, Bruce Campbell, because the guy who plays the security guard is a dead, like, he has a Bruce Campbell-y feel to him.
Well, Bruce is looking for work now, so yeah, why not?
That's what was so weird when you mentioned Evil Dead. I'm like, oh my God.
I think I'm taking Cronenberg back from you because you need Sam Raimi in there.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, because you've definitely moved away from the more horrific aspects and more to the comedic aspects.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, yours sounds like it's going to be a more funny trip.
Yeah.
Hey, existential comedy. Yeah.
And you can still, that would be amazing because you can still hit every note you want in this really trippy romantic comedy.
Yeah. Well, when he does that thing where he's slamming against the walls to try and transform him back, all I could think of was that video with Aha, Take on Me, because that's exactly what he does.
It was triggering that kind of memory of me too, but I'm like, that's so familiar, but it's just not clicking. And as soon as you said it, like, that's where it's from. That's where it's from.
You could play Take on Me over that. It would work.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it.
Yeah, that works for me. Yeah. No, I think we've come up with some pretty fun ideas. Like I said, this is a tough one to remake. And we run into this problem every time that we come up with this writer's movies. Is they're hard to remake.
Mm-hmm.
Because he writes such solid scripts. Because Paint Your Wagon was not one of our easy remakes.
No.
Network, not one of our easy remakes.
No.
I think
we did good. We did, but it was hard. We did.
That was a great episode. It was a tough episode to do, though.
Yeah. And then this one was not much easier.
No, I mean, I think because the script's so tight, like the main themes work really well. I mean, if you want to do something really different, you go Trish's route.
Yeah,
true.
Don't even try to hit the
same
notes.
It's not technically a remake, really.
Well, it is. It's just you're going comedic. There's a tonal shift. There's nothing wrong with a tonal shift. I mean, that was part of Chayefsky's hatred for this movie is because it didn't hit the tone he wanted.
Yep.
And who knows what that tone was, but it wasn't the one that was in his head.
Well, and he writes, the other reason was his scripts are so good, we can bring them forward, and all of the stuff is still there and still valid to look at.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to say you can't take a more comedic beat on that, and it would still be the same movie.
Yeah. I mean, and if you think about the other episode we've done, he's very much into satire.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I think maybe that's what's missing from this, from his vision, maybe, was the satire.
Maybe.
Because there's nothing about this movie that feels satirical.
No.
Not a thing if it's very, very serious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like his movie The Hospital, like it's a very, very black comedy. I was watching a bit of it and that's his tone. So I think that's probably what he was hoping for in this movie, maybe.
Yeah, so maybe that's what it needs to be a little feel more like Paddy Chayefsky's intention is to take a little less serious take on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, for most people, drugs are fun.
Yeah.
Right? And
we do not advocate the use of illegal drugs.
No, we do not. No.
We don't advocate. No, but
they're very dangerous for most people as well.
Advocate means we're saying do them. But we're not saying don't.
For most people, hallucinogenics are recreational.
Yes.
Again, not approving or advocating the use of them.
Whatever mushrooms you want to crush, smoke, eat in your privacy, your own home, is none of my business. I don't want to know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although I recommend portobello. It's great.
Oh,
great
portobellos are just yum, 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 yum.
Okay.
I don't get a lot of funky visions out of portobellos.
No. No, you have to get a lot of portobellos, I guess.
Yeah. There's a little extra with shiitakes.
Okay, cool. Got it on my shiitake game.
I'm not saying it's like a delic.
It's mostly I've eaten too many mushrooms. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just gas.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about this, when at the end he finds out that there's really, like, there's nothing. There's just this terror and there's nothing. How big of a dark joke is that?
Well, it is. But it's treated very, very seriously.
Yeah.
I think that we may have hit the nail on the head, is that that satire that would normally be there is missing.
Yeah, and you don't have to go too far into farce or whatever, but
no,
you can lighten up the tone quite a bit and still carry off every bit of that message.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, certainly the initial experiences could be fun.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Early on, before you get into some of the serious sense memory that he's trying to tap into. It's like he's watching television. He's experimenting with the drugs he's found that he got in South America before taking him into the isolation tank. And maybe there's a big orange running for president on the television.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. California orange.
Yeah. That would be nice. I hit two notes there.
Nice. Love it. Angry
satire.
Angry orange is running for president.
Angry orange running for president.
Yeah. What you got doing?
But
it's gonna be the best orange ever.
Right, because I can tell you is if I were a user of those particular type of hallucinogenics or any type for that matter, if I had an experience like his very first one, I'd be fucked if I'm touching him ever again.
That's what I was thinking.
He was angry because he had a bad trip.
Yeah. And I would not be going, hey, I'm going to take these back and keep experimenting with them.
Yeah.
No, you'd have to make it so like there'd be an appeal to doing it again.
Oh, yeah. He's all pissed off, storming off, and he's like, get a sample.
Yeah.
Which I guess there is a note of satire there, but it didn't come off funny, but it should have been.
It should have come off.
It should have been funnier than it was because, he gutted a lizard in his psychedelic state, and he's like, ah, it's all a bunch of horse shit. They did it. They're a bunch of con men. Get me a sample.
Or he'd be like, I just left the cave and nothing happened. That's bullshit, but let's really think about this.
Yeah, and that's a great example of where the satire and the humor was missed in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are opportunities that you can see that the script's asking for it and it's the director's not delivering it.
Yeah. Well, it's like when we were doing Reindeer Games, we're like, this is supposed to be funny and nobody realized it.
Oh, God, that movie.
Wasn't as bad as everybody says it is, but it's not as good as it could have been.
Yeah, but it tells you how a tone can completely get missed when you can see it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, this is a good example where, there are a lot of missed opportunities to lighten it up, to make those dark moments really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem I had with the movie.
There's nothing to punctuate those dark moments.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Those moments of levity and lightness, it just feels...
Or joy. There's not much joy in it.
No.
Yeah, no, it's the first 30 minutes are where all the joy is, right? And it's like, all the way through. It's like, wow, I'm a little overwhelmed. And the scene with the caveman was kind of funny in some parts.
Yeah, they were trying.
Yeah.
I mean,
they missed the mark just a little bit.
Just a little.
Yeah, and see, I thought there should have been a better commentary on, like, okay, he goes and gets chased by wild dogs. I'm like going, at what point did we domesticate dogs? Like, we never looked at that.
Yeah, wild dogs in the city, I thought, was, especially a pack of them, but,
like a caveman with domesticated dogs.
Zoo, but I kind of liked how he reacted to certain animals, the rhino that started charging. And
they were in Boston for the second half of the movie, if I remember correctly.
I believe so, yes, because his buddy's teaching at Harvard, and she's like, I've had him looking all over Boston.
Yeah, 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 they wound up moving universities.
Because they were in New York, and they moved to Boston, that's right. Yeah. But either way, in the East Coast, in the mid-70s, which is where this movie was set, there were problems with wild dogs, in particular New York and Massachusetts.
Oh, so it's all accurate.
Well,
so
there
accurate.
We go.
Don't ask me how I know that, but I do know that. I think it's from the books I'm reading right now, actually. So.
Cool.
Not because you're old.
No, not because I'm old.
Well, okay. With those dogs, when you saw them, those dogs were living in a van.
Because you're old.
Not you're that not much that older old. You.
I'm old-ish.
Ish.
We're all a little old-ish.
Let's just put it this way. I've got a little more sense memory to discover than the average person.
Yeah, it's going to take us a few trips to get back far enough.
Yes.
4 hours ain't gonna do it.
Yeah, a billion years worth of sense memory. It's gonna take a while. It's mm-hmm. gonna take a while.
Yes, it will take me just a little bit longer.
Just two more minutes in the tank really is all you're looking at.
Maybe three.
Well, any last thoughts to add to this movie?
Well, you were talking about the wild dogs, but do you remember they came out of a van? Those dogs were living in a van.
Oh, yeah.
They're not that wild. They're pretty awesome if they can figure out how to live in a van.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. But, it depends. If it was an abandoned van, that's another thing that was kind of rampant. There was a sort of decline on the
but
East Coast.
But still, these dogs smart enough to live in it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It's shelter.
I was thinking about the caveman scene, and if you wanted to go comedic and really punctuate the need to procreate, is you could have a lot of fun. Instead of him like beating that security guard, mm-hmm. you could have him trying to mate with him. I think it'd be a funny...
Making some goo-goo eyes at the monkey cage?
You could have some fun with that, too, yeah. You could have a little bit of fun with that without going over the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it would take away some of the darkness and violence of that scene to make that scene kind of funny. And then, bam, at the end, when he kills that sheep, that really punctuates that.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny until then.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have that whole, like, discovering things comedic thing they do in every movie where there's, like, an unfrozen person or a person from the past just discovering stuff.
Yeah, I just think that would lighten it up, like, just enough to make the dark moment at the end of that scene really, really powerful.
Yeah, he gets that goat pretty good. It's a sheep. It's a mountain sheep.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even need to show that, right? You just have him waking up to like next to the carcass like he did in the movie, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of meat, though. Did anybody else think, wow, ate all that meat?
Give him a pot belly when he wakes up.
Yeah. He's going to feel terrible.
He's going to be so logy.
Yeah. Just imagine, like, a lot of this movie is just him being hungover after all these sessions. He's like, I feel terrible.
I got the meat sweats.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy can't just get enough meat. Can't stop.
Nope.
Uncooked lamb.
You've been in the bathroom a long time, Eddie. So constipated.
Wow. Chewing through the wool. It's going to get a little clogged up there.
And the thing is, when he's ingested it and then he goes back to his regular self, our bodies aren't, the modern body is not designed to process raw meat either.
Yeah.
No.
Right. So, you could, again, if you're looking at the satire and sort of the humor, that can be a running note, right? Is
a running note.
Running note.
You like what I did there?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'd have his doctor friend, like, when he's real sick, he's like, still thinking Primal's good? Still thinking this is great? How you feeling, Eddie?
but it could be like a running joke throughout the whole thing is his constant discomfort because he's not processing what he does during those experiences. But
well, I mean, the amount of energy that his body gives off and uses up to make those transformations. Mm. So it would make sense that he would be really hungry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really
hungry.
Yeah. And the only time he feels good is when he's starting to process, when he's starting to revert because he's starting to use all that energy from this excess meat that he's taking in, right?
I mean, maybe he can't until he eats or expends that energy. I don't know.
That's going back to cat people where you have to kill, right?
I don't want to go back to that.
Yeah, there's like kind of this trigger that needs to happen, right? And we've already done that.
Maybe he just needs to fuck to do that.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Or maybe just to be nice to have a big meat nap because that seems to be what happens.
Meat nap.
Yeah. Well, we've already established that these trips only last 4 hours-ish, right?
Yeah.
So it's a self resolving issue.
Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to be too worried when his arm was kind of undulating and kind of doing some funky shit. I would have been freaking the fuck out.
Yeah. Yeah, like normal people do.
What is it with the movies that when people start going through bodily transformations and they're like, huh, that would fucking hurt like a motherfucker for one.
You'd think.
You'd think. Mm-hmm. Him and Brundlefly. What the fuck is up with you guys?
Maybe there's something released.
Mad Scientist Club.
Yeah.
Maybe this can be part of the whole thing. Because the explanation I've always come up with or tried to figure out is like, maybe there's something released from the brain where they don't quite understand that it's not. Like, it's a thing where you just don't think it's a bad thing. Like, with all mental illness, it makes sense to you at the time.
And that's probably what's happening. And he's been experimenting with hallucinogenic drugs. So maybe he's thinking that this is just a side effect, like where he's seeing it, but it's not actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He could be thinking he's imagining it.
Yeah. And he's ignoring it because he doesn't want to tell anybody about these side effects. Because
they'll stop him.
Because they'll stop him, right? Mm.
Especially Mason.
I think this will be our fan art challenge this week, is do some fan art with all of involving all of our mad scientists from previous episodes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few of them.
There's a
number of them.
We've got a few.
That's like a t-shirt front and back worth.
Hey, if it's really good, maybe it will be.
Yay!
That would be so cool.
It would be cool.
Absolutely.
And hey, if you want to just make comments and have questions about this episode or submit your fan art or just chat with us, you can do that in a whole bunch of different places. At Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Instagram and Facebook, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com.
Yes.
And help us we are on all of them all the time. We're monitoring them all. So we tend to respond fairly quickly.
Yes, because the alerts annoy me.
That alert. Yeah. Plus, it's just us. We can't pay anybody to do this. We just do this.
Yes.
Yeah. So sometimes, if we've got real life, which happens to us all, it might take a little bit longer, but we always, always respond somehow.
Eventually.
Some of us more than others.
Trish is basically looking at us going, you guys are doing it.
I try to do the visual stuff as much as possible, like the logos. That's what I do.
Yeah, all the fun
the non-verbal
logos are you. And Sam's just becoming a GIF master.
Working on it.
He's the GIF wizard.
GIF.
GIF. GIF. But it's just the GIF.
GIF.
Sam's got it down with the GIF.
There we go.
GIF.
There we go. No, they're fun to make. As soon as they stop being fun, he might stop seeing them.
They're not fun and they're just work.
Yeah. Exactly. Right? And then, I don't think they'll ever stop being fun, because part of the challenge is finding just the right bit of video to turn into one, right?
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, if you like his GIFs, and you like this episode and you want to share it out with the world, give us a 5-star rating and a short review over on iTunes. That would certainly help us out. And you can also tell your friends how to find the show. You already know how, but, maybe you have iTunes and, you have an Apple and they have Android. There's all sorts of places. We are on a ton of different platforms, and literally if there's a platform, we're probably on it at this point, but iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, Radio Player, FM, Blueberry, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and
frickin' YouTube.
And a whole lot more. So go check that out. The episodes drop every Tuesday, but it's every Thursday for the folks listening on YouTube. So if you don't want to miss an episode, make sure you subscribe over on YouTube and ding that bell for the notifications so you never miss an episode when they drop.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, no, tell us more. Maybe there's something in Alter States we missed. Maybe there's something we didn't say. Maybe there's something we forgot about.
I'm sure there's lots we didn't talk about. We're not going to regurgitate the movie for you.
No.
Salome. That's the Ken Russell film.
Oh, wow. It took you an entire episode, but you made it.
I got it.
Perfect timing.
There we go.
Wow. It's almost like we planned it that way, but we didn't.
Because we don't plan shit.
No. Yes.
Well done. It only took you an hour and 20 minutes for your brain to work.
I need the drugs that they're researching in this film that we have created.
Theoretically created.
Or perhaps the ones from Limitless. I'm not picky at this point.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I'm sad they canceled the TV series.
Which one? Sorry?
Limitless.
Oh, yes. Yeah. a lot of cancels came out this week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lucifer
was canceled. Yeah. Geez, and that show's so good. That was upsetting. Taken was canceled. I didn't even know it was in a second season, let alone a first.
Oh, me either. I knew it existed, but then it sort of, I just fell off the radar.
The Exorcist got canceled. Apparently nobody wants to watch possession television shows right now. It had, I think it was riding the lowest ratings on that network. So,
oh, no.
And I sounded, the people who were watching it sounded like they loved it. But
it has a very niche audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then that's the problem with television is they're trying to capitalize on whatever the trend is, like Walking Dead, which is starting to fade a little bit. But mm-hmm. they're trying to find that next new trend. And unfortunately, sometimes you just don't hit it.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to keep trying. And I mean, they were trying, and the whole movies to TV thing was seemed to be the latest trend. But
Oh, yeah. Right, with
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, which well, is which I was a fun show.
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't the most awesome thing I saw, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, the Bates Motel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's hard. It's like we've learned from doing this show. Trying to predict what's going to do well is impossible. Mm-hmm. No idea.
Unless it's a Marvel movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or a Star Wars movie. Pretty much anything put out by Disney.
Yeah. If it's Disney, they're just going to make $1 billion. I don't even want to know what they're going to make this year. No. It's going to be disgusting.
Well, three huge movies coming out in 1 year.
Oh, yeah. God. Well, you had a huge hit with Black Panther. I mean, Infinity War is just doing bonkers box office, and Trish and I have seen that.
Yep.
Now, and it was amazing. We did. And you've still got Incredibles 2 and Solo. So you got a Pixar and a Star Wars yet to come, and then Ant-Man and the Wasp yet to come. So,
oh, yeah. And is that this year? I thought
that's
this
July,
year.
That's isn't
July,
isn't it?
Really? Already?
Yeah, it's coming fast.
Oh, Disney's blowing their wad this year, eh?
Oh.
There's one after another. It is kind of a little
overwhelming.
Yes, that is the word.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They it is just a bukkake of amazing genre films.
Okay,
thank
so everybody,
where I wanted you to go.
What we want you to do is to visualize a giant mouse and bukkake and you.
Oh, more fan art.
And in there are just is a lot of merchandising logos.
Yeah, exactly. Like every little, like just the head of the sperm is all of the little things that they're doing.
That's the Pixar lead. And
yeah, we wouldn't be able to post that publicly because Disney would sue us.
No, it would just be for us.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'd still want it.
They're very litigious when it comes to the mouse.
Yeah. We could personally wear it.
Is it a mouse if it's all covered in splooge? You can at least make the argument that it might not be Mickey under all of that.
Well, no, wouldn't it be Mickey be the presenter of the materials and the audience be the
receiver
of the materials?
Mickey is...
Put that on an Oscar stage.
is getting rid.
It's a fire hose.
Is raining down upon us.
Well, I suppose you could get away with it if you didn't do the head. If it's just like shoulders down, you could get away with it.
Maybe. The gloved hands. And just like a little like teeny shadow in the background you can barely make out. Just because of the light.
Oh, God.
Oh, the places will take you.
Yeah, we might not post it anywhere, but... Crap, I'd probably wear it as a t-shirt.
Thank you, Talking Water Buffalo.
The Talking Water Buffalo's dirty.
Oh, thank you very much for that. That was fun.
Yes. Hey, it was a group effort, everybody. It was. Much like bukkake.
Yep. Leave it to me to take it into those kind of places.
And then Trish just to put the capper on it. So.
That's right.
Can't just leave it undone.
Nope. Trish will never let that lie. So no. It's out there now.
Yeah. It's happening.
All right. Well, have fun with the fan art. Until next week, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
Are you? Are you really Talking Water Buffalo?
I am. I'm Trish the Talking Water Buffalo.
And
also a great shirt idea.
Melty, fleshy pile of clothes.
I'm still Sam, even then.
Okay.
Always.
And I don't even want to know what I look like to you.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, the audience doesn't want to know.
Uh-oh.
He's scary.
We are out of here.
As a matter of fact, Eduardo, my year in India was disappointing. No matter how you slice it, yoga is still a state-specific technology operating in the service of an a priori belief system. How much
we scientists have a moral obligation to the public as well as to our own research.
What
dignifies the yogic practices is that the belief system itself is not truly religious. There is no Buddhist God, per se. It is the self, the individual mind, that contains immortality and ultimate truth.
What the hell is not religious about that? You've simply replaced God with the original self.
Yes, but we've localized it, at least to know where the self is. It's in our own minds. It's a form of human energy. Our atoms are 6 billion years old. We've got 6 billion years of memory in our minds.
Atoms are older than that.
Memory is energy. It doesn't disappear. It's still in there. That's a physiological pathway to our earlier consciousnesses. There has to be, and I'm telling you, it's in the goddamn limbic system.
Just a wacko thing, Eduardo.
What's wacko about it, Mason? I'm a man in search of his true self. How artifically American can you get? Everybody's looking for their true selves. We're all trying to fulfill ourselves, understand ourselves, get in touch with ourselves, face the reality of ourselves, explore ourselves, expand ourselves. Ever since we dispensed with God, we've got nothing but ourselves to explain this meaningless horror of life.
You're a wacko.
Well, I think that that true self, that original self, that first self, is a real, mensurate, quantifiable thing, tangible and incarnate. And I'm going to find the fucker.